Hello everyone, I'm going to introduce our next speaker. He's Christian Schneider from Tallinn. He's going to deliver his talk on Lean Microservices on OSGI.
Thanks. So I think we start right away. Time is running. So my talk is about Lean Microservices on OSGI. So I want to show how microservices are typically done today, what are the weaknesses, and what can we do to improve that using OSGI. You can also follow me on Twitter. This is the last one. I will post the slides shortly after. Not so good. Can it just take the microphone, maybe? Okay, that's better. You can also participate in the demo later, because I'm using RSC. So if you have an IRC client or can log in over the web, it's the network free node and the channel OSGI chat. If you want to join, not necessary, but you can do. So first, let's start with a short definition. What are microservices? This is according to Martin Fowler. So there were a way of designing software applications as suites of independently deployable services. They organize around business capabilities, so you don't have vertical layering. You have horizontal layering around the business capabilities. It's typically necessary to have automated deployment because you have many of these microservices. The intelligence is in the endpoints, so the control is decentralized, and you also may have very heterogeneous languages and data. So we want to create our application out of independently deployable services. And a typical limitation, especially when using Spring Boot, is you typically just can have one service per process. So another thing is normally you use REST to communicate between the services. And especially in the Spring Boot case, which is the most prominent way to create microservices right now, it's very suited to that case. If you really want to go microservices all the way, it's easy to start. You just paste your snippets together and you have something that already runs. You also don't have to do a lot of configuration. It's convention over configuration. So you only configure what is special. The defaults already work quite well. There's also good Docker and cloud support. So of course, anything we want to have as an alternative should fit into these things also. But there is also a dark side of microservices. Or like Jodo was asked at one point, are microservices stronger than OSGI? He answered, no, quicker, easier, more seductive. So that's exactly the fact. So it's so easy to start with Spring Boot that it can easily lead you to a way where you cannot return easily and maybe walk into a dark path. So let's see what it could be. One thing is the dependencies between microservices. So ideally, microservices would be standalone, not using other microservices. But in practice, it's rather like that. So you have some dependencies between the microservices, as maybe each microservice is developed by a separate team. Maybe people do not even have this kind of overview between all of them. And you can imagine when that runs in production, it's really difficult to spot where something goes wrong. It's also the operation perspective. So the good old application service worked like a container vessel, so it's maybe a little slow, a little bulky, but you have just one guy to steer the whole ship, so it's easy for operations to operate. In theory, microservices work like these fully automated harbors, so you have these automated vessels that bring containers to the right place at the right time, always, nothing going wrong. In practice, it's rather looking like that today. So you have something put together to keep running your microservices, but it's not this perfect, fully automated, all works perfectly in time. It's more like how they operated containers in these remote islands. They don't have the harbor facilities, like typical IT departments do not have the facilities to operate microservices today. And so they use what they have, tie together the small boats, and hope it's not sinking, or not too many are sinking. So there is some loss. It's also the case that microservices cannot cure bad design. So if your current monolith looks like this, then if you split it up, it will be smaller pieces of shit. But it's not better. It will not automatically cure the design of your application. So also when you use Spring Boot, what's wrong, maybe? One thing is you bring in a lot of dependencies just by adding these small little snippets they tell you. So we'll see how big it is. And another thing is, as you typically just can host one service inside one process, microservices always must communicate remotely, and distributed computing is always hard. So you introduce a lot of complexity in your application just by deciding to go microservices. And as you cannot easily move to Spring Boot later, you decide that early and have all the complexity from the start to really have separate processes, always remote communication, all the things that can go wrong in that. And so it's very hard to get it actually running in production. This is also completely proprietary, so all these Spring annotations are just Spring, so or even Spring Boot application annotations. So if you want to change to something else later, it's quite difficult. And you don't have the flexibility in packaging because Spring Boot is so much focused on the microservice idea, it's not possible to package services together because you think it's maybe better for deployment. So it's just one microservice, one deployment unit, one process. This is kind of a limiting factor if you go that way. Also, a small Spring Boot project typically looks like that, around 90 dependencies, 20 MB jar files, and that's without doing any code. It's just a very small thing. And all these dependencies pollute your class path. So as you have these dependencies already at development time, your developers always have all these classes on their class path and also in the IDE, so they are tempted to use all these. So it's also dangerous. And this makes it also very difficult to establish rules which APIs to use, because if you always have all these classes at hand, you tend to use them. So how is OSGI different in that case? In OSGI, the typical policy is to code against APIs and specs and only add the actual dependencies at runtime. So your user bundles, user projects, or the microservice projects would just code against specs, and you add all the implementations only at runtime. So you can very nicely define which APIs and specs to code against for the developers, and they're not so easily tempted to use everything that could be there. It's also that the modules, the bundles in OSGI, a bundle is basically just a jar file with additional meta type, meter information in the manifest. They are self-describing, so they describe what they need, what they provide. So it's not like in non-OSGI where just put jars together and blindly hope it's all working. You can reason over these bundles, and the one thing in OSGI called the resolver can tell you if it's probably all working together or not. So we have an easy or fast failure. You typically use OSGI services to communicate between bundles. So it's not direct calls where you call an implementation class or your user of a class needs to somehow instantiate the implementation. You just see a service. You say, I have an interface that I need, and I need a service that implements that interface, but I don't need to know how to pull up that implementation. OSGI does that for us. There's also semantic versioning, which I'll look into one slide later. And important thing is remote service admin for remote calls, and you can also use it for REST. This normally OSGI services are just using can just be used in one process. You can communicate inside one framework, one process in for it. And remote service admin allows you to use the same approach, OSGI services, but communicate remotely with other processes, and that's exactly how to be able to make it a microservice deployment. And you have a flexible packaging. You at development time, you just develop the bundles, and at runtime, you can put them together as you see fit. We'll see later in the example how you can deploy them differently without changing the code. So semantic versioning, what's that? Basically, it's what we should do all the time, but it's difficult to do outside of OSGI. We should have a three-step versioning, like major versions, minor versions, bug fix versions, like we typically set up the version names. And a major version should mean incompatible changes. A minor version means added functionality. And a bug fix version is just internal changes, no API changes. And actually, you can check this using the Maven bundle plugin. You can tell it, this is my reference API, and it tells you what you just changed is a major change or a minor change or doesn't require change at all. So this can automate your API management to a degree, which is not so easy outside of it. You can also you also have to look into what is the difference between API and SPI. For example, if you have an API and you add a method, that's a compatible change, minor version upgrade. If you have an SPI and you add a method, so the user is meant to implement the interface, you add a method, it's an incompatible change. So it's important to distinguish these, and OSGI has also annotations to mark something as an API or SPI. So you can also automatically check these. So what is remote service admin? It's a spec in OSGI that defines how you could expose services, OSGI services, to the outside world. It doesn't say how they're exactly exposed, but it tells how you have to kind of annotate your service to make it exportable and to define what limits you want. For example, you can tell it, make it a REST service or make it a TCP binary connection. So there is one thing, this is remote service admin part. This is responsible for actually exporting your service. So for example, there is CXF, DOSGI, which allows SOAP and REST transports. And there is RS remote service admin as the core framework of the implementation that allows a TCP binary transport and a fast binary transport from Red Hat, which is quite working quite well in production. And another part is the topology manager. This is the whole control center, basically. It looks into the services you expose locally and decides if to export them and how to export them. So this is the place to apply company policies, for example. So you can say a certain kind of services have to be secure in a way, like SSL and client certificates. And you can the topology manager can apply these policies and automatically make certain kinds of services secure by default. So this is very suitable for companies, but the default topology manager just looks into the services and it supports the ones that are annotated. There's also discovery, which is also exchangeable. So what I'm showing is Zookeeper discovery, but there are many implementations of discoveries in the remote service admin applications, implementations. So how would it work in practice to export a REST service using that implementation? You have your user bundle, which just has an interface annotated with JAXA REST annotations and an implementation for it. And you export this as an OSGI service and just add a property to say, I want to export this remotely. And then it can be picked up by the topology manager and select the suitable transport. here in our case, the CXF transport with REST, and CXF then creates the REST endpoint. So it just exports the OSGI service with a certain properties, and the REST endpoint is created automatically for you. In the same way, you can just depend on an OSGI service by interface on the consumer side, and if the discovery has this service somewhere that matches, it is automatically creating a proxy for you locally. So you call this proxy as an OSGI service, and it uses the suitable remote transport to connect to the server side. So let's see that in practice. Let's check how late it is. I guess I'm even a bit fast. So what I'm showing is a small chat application to really keep it simple. There are several modules that all implement basically the same interface. It's this interface chat listener. And all these modules implement the interface in a different way, but it's always the same interface. Like there is an IRC connector, which connects to the IRC channel and can chat using IRC. It's using Camel. There's a shell integration where you can send a command on the GoGo shell in OSGI to our chat listener interfaces that are present. And you can also receive chat messages and display these on the console. There's a TinkerForge display adapter, that's this one. So whenever a chat message comes in, it is shown there, and there's a motion detector. So when motion is detected, it sends out the chat message to our services. And optionally, it's using remote service admin. So it can all be deployed together or separately, which we see here. This is the simplest deployment. You can put the API and the several implementations just together in one OSGI framework, and it works. And in that case, this one framework makes a connection to IRC, connects to the TinkerForge display and motion detector, but there is no remote service communication inside present. It's just using local calls. So this is really easy to develop. It's really easy to deploy. It's just one process. It's just 6 MB. So all together, Camel, TinkerForge adapter, shell, OSGI framework, all together is just 6 MB, so a lot smaller than an empty Spring Boot project. And still it is modular, because all our modules are not tightly coupled to each other. They just use this chat API and say we need or provide services, and they can be combined in very different ways. So this is still, from the operation standpoint, the container vessel view. It's one thing to deploy, one thing to manage, so it's really easy for operations. But of course, you don't have the microservice benefits. So another kind of deployment is microservice deployment. There, in that case, we have three modules, one just doing the IRC, one just doing the TinkerForge connection, one just doing the shell, and they all can communicate with each other using remote service admin, so in our simple case, simple TCP binary connections, and they all announce their services to the zookeeper discovery, so each can find each other. You can have several instances of one process running, and they can all still find each other. So this is a deployment that is typical for microservices, and it can live in the cloud. You can make it Docker containers that can boot up. And the nice thing is, this is using exactly the same bundles we created for the all-in-one example. So I'm changing none of the bundles. I just deploy them differently and can go from one modular monolith, which I would start with, to full microservice if I need, or just pull out single services where, say, these are deployed more often, or it's another team that develops them, and I want to make it a microservice. It's not like in typical microservice world where I have to go all microservice from the start. I can start with one modular monolith and then pull out what needs to be pulled out and keep things together as long as possible. Yeah, so each deployment unit can then nightly scale as typical in the cloud. You can have several instances of this microservice without having to scale all others. Yeah, what is also interesting, remote service admin from the implementation for Ares is really, really small. It has practically no external dependencies, just 300 kilobytes of binaries, and if you need ZooKeeper, 800 kilobyte more, so this is not really adding much to the weight of your application. And you only need remote calls when you call to out to other services that are outside your framework. Everything that is still inside the same framework will use local calls, and is easy to debug, easy to manage still. And you can use the remote transports as you like. There's a lot of them supported. But then, as soon as you go microservices, you have these operational problems. But the good thing is you can solve them when you need it. You just don't have to solve them upfront, like in the Spring Boot case. So let's look into the code a bit. So first, I have to stop the stuff that's running. So let's start with the API. The central interface is the chat listener interface. It's really simple. We react on a message, and this chat message is just a typical data transfer object with getters and setters. Nothing special there. And chat broker, that's the first thing that is a bit special. There we also see the first time OGI involved. So I use declarative services here. Add component means I want to make a component out of that. Typically, a component also exports a service. So in that case, I say the service interface or implementation class is chat broker. As this is very simple, I don't even use an interface. I just use this class. Immediate true means come up when the system starts. If you don't set it, it means only come up when someone needs it. And add reference, which we see here, says I want to listen to all services that come up of type chat listener and have them in this list. And then when a message comes into the chat broker, I use a parallel stream. So I send out in parallel to all the listeners and send this message to the listener. And this is how the send message method looks like. Of imports. Just in this file, okay. Just APIs, so we have no external dependencies. That's what I want to show. You can code to APIs as far as possible, and the OSGI settings are, well, export package. I just say this should be, the API should be visible to the outside and nothing else. So it's really easy to configure that and code that. This is the integration with the Gogo shell. It's again exposing a declarative service component. I say the scope of my comment is chat and the function send, so I can type chat send or just send. And it needs the chat broker. So nice thing is references are by default mandatory, so this component only comes up when the chat broker is present. If it goes away, it goes also down. And on activation, it's just doing some internal stuff. And then when you send, when you type send and something on the shell, this is called. And there I just call broker on message. I create a chat message on the fly. And that's all. That's to send. That's to listen. This marks the service as remote able, so this allows later to do remote communication. This would be necessary if it should be a SOAP service, so if CXF DOSGI is present, then it will be also exported as a SOAP service. And it just implements the chat listener interface and prints out on the console by system out. That's how to print out to the OSGI console. So very simple code. And again, here I don't even have a BND file, so I don't have to configure anything for OSGI. It's just working by default. So if we look into that, that's how the actual jar is looking like. We see the OSGI metadata created, provide capability and private package, and we have no exports, we just import the API, and all that is created fully automatically using the, I think in that case, the BND Maven plugin or the Maven plugin, Maven bundle plugin, both work very similarly. And this is what is created from my annotations for declarative services. So in the end, it's XML, but I never have to touch this XML. It's just created on the fly. So I just use some annotations. Again, my dependencies are just for the API, and of course the basic OSGI annotations. Can also show the parent. See how it's all set up. So basically, it's just some APIs, the SLF4J, OSGI, the OSGI companion, and for test, the logging and JUnit. And I use the BND export Maven plugin, which I show later, for packaging it all together. And I use the BND Maven plugin to create my bundles. And Maven jar plugins just to create the to use the manifest created here in my my jar. So even the parent is quite small, and all the individual pumps are really small. The chat integration, the chat integration uses Apache Camel. So this is a bit more complicated than it should be, because Camel is not fully aware of declarative services. So what I need to do here is create kind of artificial references to make sure IRC and bean component from Camel are present. So without these, it would start too early and Camel would fail. And with these, it will wait until all that it needs is present. There, I have give it also a name because I need configuration. By default, every component here in declarative services can be configured with OSGI config admin, which is represented by a config file. And so I can give it configuration. The configuration is also type safe. So I give it a nickname for IRC, the IRC server to connect to, the port, channel, all that is default. And when I create a config file named like connector.irc.config, I can customize everything. So on activation, it creates the Camel context. It creates the IRC URI dynamically from our config. And then there is a simple route in Camel from IRC, convert, and then to our broker. This is using the Camel bean component, as broker just has one method, one public method. It knows what to call. And this is just the chat converter goes from a Camel message, which is IRC specific, and then creates a chat message from it. That's just a Java bean. And then this route means it's the receiving side, and the sending side is on message. This is implementing our chat listener interface again. And so it's the sender is IRC. It sends inside, sends out to the Camel producer, which sends out to the IRC URL. So this is going to the IRC channel. And the last part is the TinkerForge integration. There I have one component for the TinkerForge connection, which I can also configure, which is also not so complicated, just some debug output if we need it. This is how to implement the motion detector, all, again, declarative services. The LCD writer is implementing the chat listener again, and then on message sends out to an internal buffer, then that prints out there. But I use the buffer so I can use these little buttons here so you can scroll forward and back. And this is all really very simple code and still can do quite a lot. So now the packaging. I have Docker Compose to create Docker images of all the separate components. Zookeeper image is also there, so we can pull up all together. And this is how my deployment works. I create one index for BNT tools, which is used for the, creating the deployment here. This is kind of like a target platform in Eclipse PDE. This is bundles to choose from. And these are my requirements. These are kind of the top level bundles where I say, I want these and give me the rest. And then I get a run bundles list. This is everything that needs to be in the framework to make it work. And the OSGI resolver takes my requirements and the index and creates the run bundles. And the result is a jar that can be run directly. So we can try it out. This is java-jar and just my jar. And that's how it starts. It should now connect to the IRC channel. Oh, my connection seems to be lost here. Connecting again. Always takes a bit. So I always already show how to send a comment. Oops, what's going on? IRC connection. Oh, see, the IRC connection didn't come up. Somehow I think my Wi-Fi might be not working at the moment. Oh, now it works. So I hope the chat also comes up. So we should see hi here. So it's on the display. When I do some motion, it says motion detected. And hopefully IRC also comes up. Somehow I guess yeah, come on. Something I did that the IRC server doesn't like, I guess.
You are done, your last name is done.
Sorry?
If you take a look on your IRC chat, you have a window. When you connect, your last name is done.
Oh, okay. Any idea? Can I fix it quickly? Or I never had that. Probably not, I guess. That's strange.
You can connect to the IRC, but your host name is banned, so that's probably too much connection.
Ah, that's not ideal, because I would like to have this for the next part. This was the all together example. So one jar that has all in one framework. And the next example should be to have it in different frameworks. So I need Zookeeper for that. So I start Docker Compose up Zookeeper. And here I can start my display. This is packaging display. It's working similarly, but in that case, it's not including the IRC implementation of my chat listener, but it's including just the send command for the Google shell and the Tinkerforge connection, and it's using a remote service admin. So this works, and I can see using remote service admin, it also has a shell command, which remote services are present. So these are just the ones we implement ourselves, one for the shell integration, one for the Tinkerforge display. And then the question is if I can use the chat. I don't think so. Not sure if I can do it in any other way quickly. Do I have something here? Networks, Freenode, let's see. I can't change that quickly. Yeah, so we have to imagine it works. So basically, what I typically show there is then that I can send a message here still, of course, and it comes on the shell and on the Tinkerforge display, but of course, I'm not connected to IRC. And then I start up the second one. There, of course, I guess I get also the IRC problem. There it connects to your IRC, and then when I send a message again on the first one, it goes also to the IRC channel, and when I send on IRC, it also goes the other way. So what I can try quickly is to bring up a network on my phone. Not sure if that really helps. So let's see. If it's somewhere related to the Wi-Fi here, then hopefully it works better this way. No, still banned, so it's no way to get to IRC at the moment. So we cannot see that part of the demo. So you just see every different packaging has its project. It's a BND run file to define how you want to package. We also have a Docker file to create the Docker image, which is also really simple because we just need to run the Java, and we can set things also on the settings in the Docker file. Yeah, anything more to show? One thing more to show is how the index is created. The nice thing is BD Tools up to recently was not very well integrated with Maven. This changed recently, so we can now create an index just from a POM file, so we can say what we need. We can also do this in a kind of coarse-grained way, searching for the, here, for example, this is already provided by RS Remote Server Admin and SeekSafe DOSGI. So these are POM files specifically for the usage with as an index. So all the bundles that I need for RSA and SeekSafe DOSGI are present if I just add this one dependency. So it's a bit like in Spring Boot where you add a small dependency and get everything for technology to work. So basically, this provides the thing to look up against, and this allows us to create our self-running jars here. So let's go back to the presentation. So as we see, we can scale from very small to very large. We can start with one framework, put everything in there, have a thing that is really easy to manage. I can debug into the application and just walk through all the services. And then if I need microservices, I can split out the services that are have different requirements. So my recommendation is, if you're not sure that you actually need microservices, don't start with it. Develop your application using modular bundles. Make your application modular, but do not deploy it to different processes from the start. Stay on one single process as long as you can, because it's so much simpler. And then you can, as late as possible, decide about your packaging. You start the simplest way, and only when you have specific requirements to do it differently, you do it. And then still do it only as fine granular as needed. Stay coarse granular as long as you can from the deployment. There's also some further reading. I think that's more interesting for a reference later. Some other talks from Achim and from Milan, which cover this thing very nicely. Especially the talk from Milan really nicely compares the advantages and disadvantages of microservices and gives some recommendations when to use and when to not use microservice architectures. You also have the full example code on GitHub, here linked, and also another example how to use REST with OSGI. Yeah, that's one thing I just wanted to look into shortly is you can also nicely start and debug from Eclipse. I can just say debug OSGI, and it starts up here, and I can directly go into breakpoints here and debug through. So that's a lot easier than you're used to normally in OSGI, except for PDE, which sucks for other reasons. So yeah, basically that's the talk. Any questions? Not at the moment, so.
Just one question regarding remote service admin, RSA, and so topology manager. Mm-hmm. If you have one interface and more than one implementation of this interface, how you manage, how topology manage decide which implementation will be called in this case? Is it some property based like in OSGI, or is some different mechanism?
You can use properties basically. If you expose services implementing the same interface, for example, in different machines, they both get exported, and Discovery will see both. And so every client will see two instances of the proxy locally. And you can then, for example, also see the properties of the service in the original machines, and then decide from the properties which one you want to choose.
Client don't specify any properties, this kind of round robin algorithm?
No. It's using by OSGI service selection, I guess most of the time, this first one present. If you have priority of the service, the one with a higher priority. But it's not always rebinding. You have to specifically configure to rebind if you want.
Okay, it's for sure.
And any plan to implement advanced load balancing policies in the topology manager? That's, I mean, in Keras Stellar, for instance, in the OSGI implementation, we have round robin, we have weight based, we have random. Yeah, is something planned in the topology manager or not yet?
Yes, it's planned, but not yet started. So as soon as the first requests come up that people would like to have it, I would start with that. Basically, you can do that exactly on this topology manager level, because the topology manager decides which services to expose to the local client. And there it can decide there are two services outside, but I want to export only one with the interface and then do round robin to these. So that's absolutely possible, but not yet implemented in this week.
Okay, thank you.
Just perhaps the second part of my question is a bit an architectural one. You show that basically the local interfaces, local OSGI services could be easily exposed as remote as well, and you mm-hmm. don't need to change anything in the bundle. But normally you have a bit different granularity in the interfaces,
yes.
In the local and remote. What is your recommendation? So I'm a bit afraid that the people will blind expose the local things and start to communicate remotely and have some performance penalties and something like this.
So basically you have to update your design to this requirement of being remote. So if your service has to be remote, it has to just have the, from the design, the granularity that it's not called 100,000 times per second. It would not work over the remote connection. So you have to think how this service is used. So if you think it should be maybe remote able, then you have to design it that it's not called that often. Yeah. For example, a typical pattern that is old but fits well is the service facade, where you say you offer a more coarse-grained service that is internally calling the local fine-grained services, but offers this coarse-grained facade to the outside world. It's also like in Eric Evans, the how's it called? With its
service boundaries.
Yeah, exactly. These boundaries between the modules. where you do not expose all the fine-grained stuff, but that's typical design that you also should use in any other implementation, if it's OCI or not.
And in terms of kind of sizeization you do when you create the local proxy service, do you use only Java sizeization right now, or is it something you can
this
configure?
This is for this very simple TCP transport. For example, in CXF, the OSGI, we have all the abilities of CXF. I have an example at CXF, the OSGI, that uses SSL certificate on the server side and a client certificate on the client side, and it's done using SSL, using intents in remote service admin. So it's just a string that says this is must need SSL, and then you define an OSGI service that configures how SSL is meant to be. So on the client side, it means use this client certificate. On the server side, it means configure for SSL.
For the transport, I agree, but I mean, let's say I have a service that takes a string. How would you serialize the string between the client and the remote service?
That's depends on your transport. So in the TCP case, it's using a binary serialization. In CXF case, you have all that CXF offers. So for SOAP, it's XML. For REST, it's a JSON or XML or whatever REST does. So you can also transmit images, binary, all that REST offers.
Okay, thank you. I knew that, actually.
Yeah, sure.
Potentially, you can configure the SXF features on SXF features also for the.
You can create one OSGI service that returns feature instances, and these will be applied if you specify this intent by name. So, what you expose gets a name, and you, on the service, you specify I need these intents by name, and the service will only start when these intents are present as OSGI services.
So basically, you can also write own message body, write message body readers if you want. Yeah. So change the extend standard serialization of CXF.
Yes.
Thank you.